Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org under Public Affairs, on the WDIY app, or on many streaming services. Today is March 25th, 2026. The markets were up today with the Dow closing at 46,429, the NASDAQ at 21,929, and the S&P at 6,591. Our topic tonight is deeper dive into tax-free investment vehicles. And income, if I have time. We are live tonight. We'll take your questions. Bob and Cindy are in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information. We ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I'll do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. 610-758-8810. You can speak live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Cindy and they'll bring it in to me. Questions are also available to be submitted at yourfinancialchoices.com. So talking about tax-free investment vehicles, I'm not yet talking about tax deferral accounts. Tax deferral accounts are different than tax-free investments. And tax deferral accounts, we're usually referring to like 401ks, pre-tax contributions, IRAs, as in deductible IRAs, annuities, where sometimes people make investments and then defer that income until some later point in their life. Those are types of investment accounts that might save you money today, but they will have taxes later. So that we call tax deferral. I'm going to talk about some bullet points of tax-free accounts so you know what I'm talking about right off the top here. And then as we go into the show, I'm hoping I'm going to have some time to talk about some tax-free income too, which is the concept behind tax-free investments. But tax-free income doesn't necessarily have to be like tax-free investments, okay? So there is a little bit of a differentiating point there. So when we talk about tax-free investments, I want to make sure that you understand what I mean. They are intended or designed to provide tax-free income if you follow the rules. There's always a little caveat. Remember, if something seems too good to be true, it may be too good to be true. So not everyone may be eligible for some of these tax-advantaged accounts. There's always rules around them. And basically, why would we even have something that would be tax-free? You know, like what? Like, why wouldn't everybody have that? Why wouldn't we do that? Well, it's to incentivize an investor to direct a certain behavior. That's how we have to think about it. So typically, that incentive is to save money for something in the future, or for a particular behavior or need. So I'm talking about actual tax-free investments, and I'll tell you kind of what that means. When we look at those types of accounts I'm talking about, that would be Roth IRA, inherited Roths, 529 education accounts, health savings accounts. You might have investments in municipalities. That's like state government, local government. Life insurance may offer some kind of tax-free income. All right. So the incentives to save in these accounts stem from could be medical costs for now or in your future, education costs for now or in your future, retirement, typically your future, survivor needs. So you heard me mention, you know, retirement accounts, that could also be for a survivor. You heard me, inherited, that could be for a survivor. Life insurance quite often for a survivor. So these tax-free investment vehicles are trying to incent you to have certain behavior, and it's usually around saving. All right. Folks, we're a little off on our break times tonight, but I think, Bridger, we'll go ahead and take a quick break now. We'll come back. And if you have questions, you can also ask tax questions tonight. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
So far, we're thrilled to report that 18 listeners have given blood as part of the Power of a Pint campaign. But we don't want to stop there. Power of a Pint is only at its halfway point, so you still have until the end of March to participate. For every blood donation made this month at a Miller Keystone Blood Center location, an anonymous supporter will also make a $50 donation to WDIY. For more information and registration, visit WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We can talk live with you on air, or if you're not comfortable talking live, give your question to Cindy. We're talking tonight about a deeper dive into tax-free investment vehicles. I gave a bullet point list, and that's because, you know, sometimes people can't listen through the whole show. So if I at least you mention these, it's going to get you thinking, hopefully. And whether or not it applies to you will all depend. But basically, Roth IRAs, people, regular listeners know I talk about those all the time. And those can have different forms, by the way. So let me just touch on that for a moment. When I say Roth IRAs, you could have an individual Roth IRA that you set up on your own. You might have inherited a Roth IRA, or you may have a Roth option through an employer-sponsored plan. The Roth feature means you're not getting a tax deduction today. There's no tax deferral today for you. But if you get it invested and growing, it can grow income tax-free for your future. And the incentive is, again, to save for your retirement future. So it's not, you're not necessarily kind of putting that money that you can know you want to get your hands on it. They put little handcuffs around it. So I'll talk about that in a minute. But the Roth can grow income tax free. Now, typically, it depends on each person's situation and their risk tolerance. But in my mind, if I have something that's tax free, if I invest it and it's going to grow and it's for a long term, meaning, you know, you could start saving as soon as you have earnings, you have to have wages, and then there's certain income limits of how much you can put into each of these, what, you know, into the Roth IRA or the 401k Roth. The idea is you want it to grow income tax-free. So that typically means you're taking a little bit more equity exposure for growth. You know, if you have cash, that's not growing. So there's no point in having cash in a Roth IRA, so to speak, okay? You know, I know listeners might say, but wait, I need cash to, you know, pay the fees, or I need cash for, you know, just in case, whatever. Okay, maybe a little, but the concept is you want it to grow income tax-free, and grow is the key word there. So Roth IRAs are could be tax-free investments. So remember I said, what's the incentive? The incentive is to get you to, you know, save for retirement. But they always put little rules and handcuffs around things. So you heard me say there's income limits. I've talked in recent weeks about the limit on 401ks. And there's the under age 50 amount and then over age 50 amount. So I think in 2025, the amount was $23,500 and $7,500 for a total of $31,000. And in 2024, I don't have those numbers at my fingertips. But it's around the same, you know, a little bit more. Okay, so you could defer to a Roth, then you don't get a deduction today, and that money is growing income tax-free. And when you eventually retire or you change companies, change employers, you could always roll over the Roth piece into your own Roth and have it continue to grow income tax-free. So that's through an employer where you can get really big amounts. you have to be aware for people who are working, who are over 50 or over, you have a catch-up contribution that you can do going forward. Like I said, in 2025, it was $7,500. If your income was over, I think, $145,000 in 2025, your employer in 2026 has to do your catch-up contribution into a Roth. Okay, so you're not going to get the tax deferral on your catch-ups if you were a high-income earner in the prior year. That money would go into a Roth. If your employer has a Roth feature, a Roth option, more and more employers do have that. And with this new legislation, many adopted that, made it part of their plan. So you may have a Roth IRA without even realizing it, knowing it, or, you know, understanding that, oh, I was always maxing my 401k, and all of a sudden now you see something going into a Roth part of the 401k. Your employer should have talked to you about this, let you know that it was an option, and this is what's going to happen. Okay? So that could be another way you get money into a Roth. Then, of course, there's the individual Roth IRA that you can do. Remember I said you have to have earnings. So I just had recently an experience where for the first year we were doing a taxpayer's tax return, and they're a child, but an adult child, and they'd been putting money into a Roth for a number of years. The issue was they had no earnings, and I love that they were so, you know, so good about this. They had been gifted some money, and they put the money into a Roth, and I, you know, I love the idea of that, but you have to have earnings. So it's the amount that you can put into the Roth for 2025 is $7,000. And I should have had these numbers better. In 2026, I think it's up to $7,500. So $7,000 is what you could put in for 2025, but you had to have $7,000 of earnings, all right? If you make a lot of money, then now there's a cap on how much you can put into a Roth based on your income. So if you're single, you make less than $150,000, you can make a regular contribution to a Roth. It's, again, not deductible, but it's getting some money growing income tax-free. Between $150,000 and $165,000, there's a phase out. If it's over $165,000, you can't do the regular Roth contribution. There's something called the backdoor Roth. I'm not going to talk about that right now. If you're married filing joint, the income under $236,000, you and your spouse could each do a Roth as long as you have earned income, meaning wages or self-employment income, and you can do that for yourself and your spouse, okay, even if your spouse doesn't have earnings. Between $236,000 and $246,000, there's a phase out. Over $246,000, again, you can't make the regular Roth contributions. It would have to be a backdoor, and that's a little complicated. Not talking about that tonight. I'm talking about the ways to get money into tax-free investments for yourself, and there are some rules around it, but they are there. We are at our next break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100 or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. We're talking about deeper dive into tax-free investment vehicles. So right now I'm talking about Roth IRAs. I did look up those catch-up or the numbers for 2026. So for the Roth and for a deductible IRA, which is not income tax-free when you take it out, but there is tax deferral on it. The amounts for 2025, I already gave you $7,000. For 2026, it's $7,500. If you're under 50. If you're 50 or over and within the income limits I mentioned, it's $8,600. So this is for the Roth, if you're within those income limits, single or married, file and joint, $7,500 under 50, $8,600. The catch-up is $1,100. For 401ks for 2026, the under 50 contribution max is $24,500, and the catch-up is $8,000, and that brings us to $32,500. But again, if your income was over that certain threshold from 2024, then your catch-up may go into a Roth automatically. And then there are some extra monies that you can put in if you're certain ages. For between age 60 and 63, there's an extra catch-up. So that's always for 401ks. All right? Okay, so Roth IRAs, great way to save, income tax-free if you follow the rules. Here's the rest of the rules. So I told you there's income limits, there's earned income requirements. And then there is a rule called the longer of 5 years or age 59 and a half. So you have to hold those funds in the Roth the longer of 5 years or age 59 and a half to get them completely income tax free. Regular listeners know what I'm going to say next. You can always take out your original contribution. So your original contributions can always come back out. So for example, I ran a couple little bit of numbers for Roth to demonstrate the power of it. If someone were to put $625 a month for 20 years, no, I didn't even increase it for inflation. I just said that the amount never changes. It's $7,500 a year for 20 years, but you're doing it at $625 a month for 20 years. So you could be 18, as long as you make $7,500, you could start funding your Roth. And as long as your income doesn't go over those certain thresholds, you could do this for 20 years. At $625 a month for 20 years at 8%, that would mean you would put in $150,000 after 20 years. And it doesn't feel so bad when you're doing that amount. It's very doable. At 8%, that adds up to $370,592 at an 8% rate of return on $625 a month for 20 years. That's $220,000 tax-free. Now, remember, I said 20 years, and if you started at 18, you're only 38 at that point. Well, shoot, at 38, Lori, you know, you had me do this, and I can't take out those earnings without taxes and penalties. Remember, there's always handcuffs. But guess what you can always take out? Your original contribution. If you needed it, if you really needed it, let's say you decided to buy a house and you needed $50,000, you can always take out your original contributions, which is why it's very, very important to track that. And you can track that on a Form 8606 or, you know, in your own record. So make sure you track it. And if you invested and had an average rate of return of 10%, which the stock market historically, I think, can get to 10% rate of return, the account could grow to $478,561. That is $328,561 of tax-free income, all right? So it's important to understand when we talk about tax-free investments that you know what the rules are going in, what the rules are during the period that you're holding it, and what the rules are on the other end of it, on the other side of it. So now once you reach age 59 and a half in my story, and I didn't even talk about this growing even more, you know, X number of years later, when you reach age 59 and a half, remember I said the longer of 5 years or age 59 and a half, now you could take out the whole thing income tax-free if you wanted. But gosh, you did such a good job saving all those years and you start to see it grow and you see the benefit of it. Maybe you don't need that money. That might be the last asset you give your kids. Maybe that's an estate planning tool. And now you just have passed an income tax-free investment to your children instead of a taxable IRA or a taxable 401k. Now they may be able to inherit an income tax-free Roth IRA. So a Roth IRA can be income tax-free to the owner as long as they follow the rules, or income tax-free to the heirs. All All right. So just understand the rules a little bit. So we were talking about Roth IRAs, not tax deferred, but tax free if you follow the rules. Let's talk about another tax free investment vehicle that, again, may not apply to everyone, but it certainly incentivizes people who may support education, either as a grandparent for your grandchild or as a parent for your child, or even nephews, nieces. I mean, I've given gifts to my niece for her to help fund a 529 for her new baby, two babies. So you can make gifts to, you know, the parents to make contributions to 529s. It doesn't necessarily have to be an income tax-free account for you. It could be an income tax-free account for, you know, maybe a family member that you want to help them save for education. So 529 education accounts can also be invested for tax-free growth and tax-free treatment, as long as, again, you follow the rules. And the rules are, number one, it has to be used for education. So if you have, maybe you have a new grandchild and you have plenty of money, you don't need it for yourself or your retirement, you did a good job saving, and maybe your kids are just starting off, they bought a house, they have a mortgage, they have a car, now they have a new baby, maybe one of the spouses is, you know, working part-time and taking care of the baby, or maybe childcare is so expensive. So, you know, a lot of money's going out the door and they might not have the funds to start funding one of these 529s. But let's say you do, and you could put, as a individual, I can make a gift of $19,000 to anybody I want without having to file any tax returns, any gift tax returns, and even the person receiving it has to do nothing. So that is what used to be the annual exemption everyone talked about. What's my gift exemption? People still think it's $10,000. Well, it's changes for inflation, and it's $19,000 now. Let's pretend I'm a single grandparent and I have all this money, and I'd rather see my you know, grandkids or my children benefit from it while I'm alive and I can watch them benefit. I could fund a 529 with $19,000 a year without having to file any gift tax return, no reporting. And $19,000 is just also a deduction on, for example, a Pennsylvania return. We're Pennsylvania residents and from where we air. That would be a deduction. There's like 30 states that offer a deduction on their state return for funds deposited to an education account. It depends on your state and it depends on what they require. They may require you contribute to a state plan. Pennsylvania, you can contribute to any plan in the country. It's very favorable. And whoever's making that contribution could get a deduction on their tax, on their Pennsylvania tax return or their state tax return, and then get that money invested to grow for education. I'll talk a little bit more about that with an example as well when we come back from this next break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
You're welcome back. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Cindy. 610-758-8810. So talking about taking a deeper dive in tax-free investment vehicles, we talked about Roth IRAs and the different ways you can get a Roth and the different requirements and some of the rules. Now we're talking about education accounts. Again, this might not apply to everybody, but it could apply to a lot of people. So if I take my same story like I did with the Roth IRA, and that was just the individual Roth example I gave, not like the 401k Roth, for 529s, if someone could put $19,000 into a 529 for each year for 18 years, so someone has a brand new baby, we start putting $19,000 in a year at simple interest. I didn't do compounding here. I just did simple interest, 8%, $19,000 for 18 years. It grows to that's an investment of $342,000. And at 8%, that grows after 18 years to $768,000. And that is $426,000 of tax-free growth. And you might say, well, Lori, really, do we think in 18 years school might cost $768,000? Well, I don't know. I mean, some of the schools today cost, you know, $350,000. It depends on where your child's going. Then the next question might be, well, what if my child, you know, doesn't go to one of those really expensive schools? There are other options for the 529, meaning you can change the owner can change the beneficiary to another relative. It has to be a relative, but they could change that. Or, you know, you could change the beneficiary. So it could go from, I could open it for my grandchild, but then maybe my grandchild doesn't use it all, but my grandchild could now become the successor owner when they're an adult, and then they could use it for their children. So you could pass it on that way. Or you could say, well, you know, Bobby didn't need it, but Sister Susie could use it, and we could transfer from one 529 to another 529 as long as it's a relative. There's also exceptions to, you know, because remember I told you there's always rules and they want to incent you to save for education. So what would happen if you didn't? If you tried to take what we call a disqualifying withdrawal from the 529, meaning I took money out and it wasn't for education, now they're going to charge income tax on the earnings. So it would be pro rata. So in my little story, if I invested $342,000, after 18 years, it grows to $768,000. If I took the whole $768,000 out, I would have income tax on the earnings, and I would have a 10% penalty for a disqualifying withdrawal. Well, chances are I still would use a chunk of that for education. Now, there are ways to avoid the 10% penalty, and that is perhaps there was a scholarship. So if your student ended up getting like a $50,000 scholarship and you didn't need the money for the 529, that would be an exception for the 10% penalty, but it's not an exception for the tax on the gain, on the income. So sometimes you have to kind of monitor that, watch out for it, and just be aware, though. But, you know, quite often I see people using all the money in the 529s, even when at one point they might have thought, how am I ever going to use all that? And they've expanded the use of 529s. They've expanded what they cover. So years ago, it wasn't necessarily for trade schools. Now you can use it for trade schools. So that opens up an opportunity for more of your maybe grandchildren or nieces or nephews to be able to use it. It's not just for four-year education. It could be used for grad school. It can be used for trade schools. And it can also be used for K-12 private tuition. In 2025, the most you could take out for private tuition would be $10,000. So if the tuition was seven, you could take out seven income tax free. If the tuition was, 17, you could take out 10. It was capped. And in 2026, they've expanded that to now $20,000. So if your kids are going to really swanky private schools that cost a lot of money, you can use up to $20,000 toward tuition. There's also expanded coverage for things like, I think, tools that you might need, and private tutoring, I believe, tutoring as well. So you want to make sure you review those expanded rules, because that might apply to you. I've had clients who've had their kids, you know, they were saving for private college, or excuse me, just college for years and years and years, and then their child went to private high school. And I think at the beginning, like in elementary, they didn't have this tuition allowance. And then they changed the rules and said, oh, now you can do $10,000 for K-12. And now they've expanded it even more. So then when that started happening, the clients still wanted to make sure they had enough for the college savings. But they knew that they could put the money in for the private tuition and then, you know, withdraw it because it was a qualified education and could be a deduction on the return. So again, it's a tax-free investment vehicle, but there could be even other tax benefits if you're getting a deduction on your state return. So lots of benefits. We did have a caller try to call in, and we're asking you to call back at 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. We're going to try to see if we can get that call through for you. If not, you can always give your question to Bob and Cindy, and they'll bring it in to me. So 529 education accounts, expanded rules, expanded, you know, options for you. Great way to save. Quite often now, let's talk about this for a minute. So remember when I was talking about the Roth IRA, I said it's growing income tax-free. It's for a long time. You can't take it out to the longer of age 59 and a half or 5 years. Well, the education accounts, those are going to come, you know, where you're going to need it a little sooner. You know, if you start saving in a Roth at age 18 and you can't take it out till age 59, that's like 41 years of saving. Whereas the 529, you might need in 18 years. So you might, you have to be careful on your investment options and your risk tolerance on those. You could be a little bit more aggressive in the early years when you know you have 18 years. But as you get closer to needing that money to take it out for the education, you don't want to forget about reviewing your asset allocation and investment risk tolerance on those. Okay, so be careful of that. So we've talked about Roths. We've talked about 529s. Another type of tax-free investment that you may or may not have would be a health savings account. I'm telling you, even probably 5 years ago, I don't know if any of, or maybe like a couple clients had health savings accounts. Now I'm seeing lots more of health savings accounts. Now, the rules and the handcuffs around health savings accounts, you have to have a high deductible health plan in order to participate in a health savings account. And this was typically through your employer, where you would have a high deductible health plan or a private high deductible health plan. They did recently change the rules, and I'm to expand them a tiny bit, and I'm not totally familiar with them because it doesn't apply to a lot of my clients, but they have expanded the rules to allow for a health savings account, even for someone who has a bronze or catastrophic plan. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a high deductible health plan as we have traditionally understood it to be. It could be a bronze or catastrophic plan or another marketplace plan that's designated as eligible for a health savings account. Now, many people may not be aware of this, may not have realized this. Quite often when you are getting your health insurance through your employer, they are telling you, here are your options. Here's this regular, you know, PPO, HMO. Here's this regular, you know, health insurance plan. Or here, folks, you might have this option for this high deductible health plan. So they're usually telling you, and then they'll, at your HR department will tell you, oh, and if you take this high deductible health plan, you can set up a health savings account. Well, if you're out there on your own, you're not employed, or you don't have health insurance through your employer, and you're having to obtain it yourself, or you obtain it through the marketplace, now you're having to decide what kind of plans you're getting. You might know that you're buying a high deductible health plan that makes it eligible for a health savings account, or you might not realize you got a bronze plan. And what, you know, I am understanding now is that certain plans like bronze or catastrophic plans, or again, those marketplace plans that in the past may have said not eligible, may be eligible now for a health savings account. So why would that be such a big deal? Well, the health savings account, particularly for people who get high deductible health plans, is usually young people who never go to the doctor. They don't really have any, you know, big expenses. And the reason they're getting a high deductible health plan or a catastrophic plan or a bronze plan is because the premiums are low. And the premiums are lower because you have a higher deductible. Well, if you never go to the doctor, then maybe it doesn't matter that it's a high deductible plan, you see? So your premiums are lower, so you're saving money that way. But then you would be allowed to put money into this health savings account. And with that, some people just put it into the health savings account. They get a deduction. If it's through the employer, they're getting a deduction for federal tax, state tax, Social Security, Medicare tax. It's just incredible the savings you get. If you're not employed or doing it through an employer plan, you still could make these contributions on your own. And you have until April 15th to do it for 2025. And for 2026, the amounts for self-only coverage are, $1,700, $3,400? Oh, those were the deductibles. For the plans, I think it's like $8,500 for a family. So the amounts that you can put into the health savings account are quite large, and that's a deduction for you for federal purposes and certain states. If you're not doing it through the employer plan, then you're not getting the benefit of the tax savings on Medicare or Social Security. But you can put away a lot of money. And then you, as I said, some people leave it in the health savings account because they're using it. So they just leave it in cash and they're using it and they're paying for medical expenses. But as I said, for many young people, if they're not having those high expenses, then that account would just accumulate and accumulate. Well, you can invest it. You can invest it and you can invest it and make money, and it's growing tax-free, and you can use it in the future for qualified medical expenses. So you can't take the money out and just spend it on groceries. You have to take it out for medical expenses. But it can grow and it can go with you, which is very different than a flexible spending account at work. You usually have to use it or lose it for a flexible spending account. But the high deductible health plans have that option of opening up a health savings account. You get the money invested that you don't think you're going to need currently. You can get it invested. It can grow income tax free, and it can grow to, you know, a considerable amount. And then as you're aging through the workforce and all of a sudden you're in PT appointments and eye appointments and, you know, needing all kinds of extra work done, you might need that money and you can take it out income tax free rather than taking it out of your, you know, your other taxable investments. You can take it out of your health savings account and not pay income tax on that distribution as long as it's used for health, qualified health expenses. All right, folks, we're at our last break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services, including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. We're talking about tax-free investments tonight. So talked about Roth, talked about health savings accounts. The amount that you could put into the health savings account is for self only for 2026, I believe, $4,400. And for a family, $8,750. So those are pretty big numbers. If you can imagine, maybe if you did it for a few years, that would be, for a single person, like $12,000. And if you're investing it, you know, you could grow to, you know, 15,000 in X number of years. So you could get some tax-free growth on that money. All right. And use it for medical expenses. Now, remember, there might always be like a balance, you know, when you're considering what to do. Number one, you have to have extra money. I always want people to have an emergency reserve first. The next place I might like to see people put money might be that Roth IRA, because remember I said you could always get out your original contributions if you need it, and that could be used for anything. And then the next, if you have a high deductible health plan, might be that HSA, all right, because that would be for medical. So if you look at the kind of like the pecking order of things, I will, let's see, there was a thought I had on that too. So medical expenses, the Roth. We want to make sure you also get the match on your 401k. So that's also a priority. So emergency reserve, the match from your employer, which is free, but usually doesn't require you to put that much in, even if they even do a match. So let's pretend your employer says, I'll put in 3% if you put in 3%. Well, that's 3%, that's free money. So you want to do that. If they don't put anything in, well, then I would certainly probably consider, you know, the Roth if you're eligible for it first. It depends on if you need the tax deferral or not. So remember, tax deferral versus tax-free. Love the tax-free. But if you could do the individual Roth because of having earned income and being within the income limits, as I said, you can always get that. If you're get to it, you can always get to the original contribution. If you're doing it through a 401k, you may not be able to get to it. You see, because there's rules around 401ks, and the employer, you know, summary plan document might say you can't get to these contributions that you've made unless there's, you know, some exception. All right. So emergency reserve, get your match, Roth IRA, and health savings account if you're eligible for the health savings account. Another tax-free investment, and you know, I don't know if I would call it investment, so to speak, but you know, life insurance. So life, and I'm not a life insurance agent, but life insurance, you know, we really need to look at life insurance when perhaps we have circumstances where a survivor may need, you know, may rely on us while we're alive. Maybe I'm working and my spouse doesn't work, or I'm working and I have a mortgage. I'm working and I have three kids that I want to have education. I need to plan for if something happens to me and I'm the breadwinner, what are my survivors going to do? And that typically would be using life insurance. And life insurance, when someone dies, is tax-free to the person, to the beneficiary. All right. So that's kind of a tax-free investment. Now, you've got to be careful with insurance. Again, I'm not an insurance agent, but there's all different kinds of life insurance. So you better be sure of what you're buying and when you're buying and how you're buying and premiums, et cetera. So typically, when we think of something like term insurance, that's usually cheaper, but it's for a shorter term. It could be like 20 years, and you could usually get out of it whenever you want. Then there's whole life, and whole life, usually the premiums are higher, and you're building up some kind of what they call cash value. And sometimes that cash value further on in the policy life may be able to help pay the premiums in the future, and or just build up more cash value. And then sometimes people will borrow off that cash value. So occasionally you'll hear insurance agents talking about this tax-free money. Well, it's money that you've put into the policy and it's built up. So, I mean, it's still your money. Once you take, and sometimes that extra money gets invested, right, within the policy. And if you were to turn that policy over, surrender it, then sometimes you could have a tax consequence. So if for example, over the years I put in, you know, $50,000 of premiums and I don't want to do it anymore, and they say, oh, here's your cash value, you can have it back, and it's like $45,000, well, I won't have a taxable event then because I've, you know, well, I'm not going to say that exactly, but typically if the money I'm getting out of it is less than the money I put into it, I don't have a taxable event. But there are those circumstances where I might get more money out of it than I put in it, and then you could have a taxable event. So you just want to be really careful with that. But for the most part, typically, most people probably have term insurance or maybe group insurance through work. And that is another way to kind of generate some kind of asset. Unfortunately, not for you while you're alive necessarily, unless you're tapping cash value, but typically the death benefit for the survivor. All right. So that would be kind of another tax-free way to save. All right. So let me see what else I've got for tax-free. I said I want to talk about for a minute maybe tax-free income. So I've talked about some tax-free investments and how you are incented to either save for retirement, for education, or for, you know, survivors, for medical expenses. you're incented. That's why they're tax-free investments, but they have all kinds of, you know, handcuffs and rules around them, and you want to make sure you understand what they are, all right? So that's that. Now we might have tax-free income. What other kind of tax-free income might we have that isn't necessarily from investments, so to speak? Well, one thing I'm going to say right off the top is once you're age 70 and a half, if you're charitably inclined, you can make contributions from your IRA to charity and not pay tax on it. It's incredible. So if you have an IRA with $100,000 and you give $2,000 to the church every year, and let's say you have no other money and you take $2,000 out of the IRA, you pay tax on the $2,000, and then you put it in your bank account and you go give it to the church. If instead you gave the $2,000 directly out of your IRA to the church, the check's written to the church, that is tax-free. You're not paying tax on that money. And you are giving it away, you know, but you're also typically giving money out of your bank account to charity if you're charitably inclined anyway, and you have an IRA and you're age 70 and a half, I would do it out of your IRA. It's income tax-free, all right? You just want to make sure you do it the correct way. Other kinds of tax-exempt income might be municipals. Now, municipals is when you're investing in typically bonds issued by a municipality, such as a state, county, local authority that is raising money for reinvestment in the community. And the advantage of that to you, the incentive, is for us to invest in our communities to help build them up, support them financially, invest in our communities. So the incentive is municipals, almost all of them, there are some caveats, but for the most part, the ones I'm talking about are tax-free for federal purposes, but they may or may not be tax-free for state purposes. It all depends on what state of residency you are. So municipals are always tax-free for federal, the tax-free ones I'm talking about. And for the state, it depends on the state. So I have clients who live in New Jersey. They inherited a bunch of municipals. The municipals were all from Pennsylvania because the decedent was from Pennsylvania. So we have to always make an adjustment on their New Jersey return to add the Pennsylvania municipal interest back because that is not tax exempt for New Jersey. So the same thing, if you buy, you know, South Carolina, if you buy California and you're a resident of Michigan, those are not going to be tax-free to Michigan. Only Michigan's municipals would be tax-free to Michigan. Okay? All right. So there could be some tax-free income that would be available to you. As I said, QCDs, municipals. I've mentioned on shows before, sometimes Social Security is not taxable. It all depends on how much other income you have on your return. If you have a ton of other income, chances are 85% of your Social Security will be included. That's where it's capped. So we already know we're getting 15% under current legislation. We're getting 15% of Social Security tax-free for sure. And for certain people, some of the Social Security might be taxed, you know, and most of it tax-free, and other people, 85%. It all is a circular calculation depending on how much other income you have on your tax return. All right. So municipals we've talked about. We've talked about QCDs. Other kinds of tax-free income might be long-term capital gains or qualified dividends. It's like, what are you talking about, Lori? I have capital gains. I have qualified dividends. I pay tax on them. What are you talking about? They can sometimes be tax-free. If you are in the 12% tax bracket or lower, then long-term capital gains and qualified dividends, to the extent you're in the 12% tax bracket, are zero. So let's pretend you are single and your taxable income is, Let's say your taxable income is $40,000 and you happen to have $40,000 of qualified dividends and long-term capital gains. Well, taxable income for a single person at the 12% rate, you're still at the 12% rate up to $48,000. I told you in my little story here, the taxable income was 40. It was all long-term capital gains and dividends. It's all going to be taxed at zero. All right. So long-term capital gains and qualified dividends can be taxed at zero depending on your tax bracket. So you want to watch out for that if it can make a difference in your tax planning, etc. All right. Other kinds of tax-free investment income, and this is might be a little bit harder to understand. Let's pretend you inherit a brokerage account. Mom and dad invested for years in high-tech stocks, and they invested, you know, $100,000, and, you know, 30 years later, it's worth $1 million. If they sold it the day before they died, it would all be long-term capital gains, big, big gains. But if they hold it, they die, it gets a step up in basis to that $1 million. So they both die, let's say. They get a step up in basis at the second to die. It's a half step up at the first death, a full step up at the second death. So now my account value is $1 million, and my cost basis is $1 million. If I'm inheriting it, the next day I could sell that portfolio and have zero income tax on that. There's a step up in basis. So that's another way to get some tax-free investment. It's very hard for me to see when I see people who are, you know, elderly and they're selling highly appreciated securities, you know, and they're on death's door. I mean, it's like, just wait. Sorry. Let's be practical. I always feel like, you know, we have, you know, parents or grandparents who are elderly and they've worked so hard to save that money all those years, to invest it, to grow it. And then someone turns around and sells it and has these huge gains that if they had just hung on for a little bit while longer, they wouldn't have had those income taxes. All right. Next week, I am going to talk, speaking of, you know, getting old and passing away, next week, I'm going to do a show on what I call final wishes and goodbyes, tips to help. I actually had a client who went through this with her father, and she came up with such great questions of things that we don't always think about that I thought, you know, what a great idea for a show. For example, she said, you know, when someone dies, how does someone know? Like, how do you find out? Who finds out? Who, you know, find someone comes across someone who's passed away, and who gets notified? How do we know who to notify? How do we know who the executor is? I mean, if the police are called in, if you're single and you don't have maybe children or parents at this point. So we're going to just talk about maybe some tips for that. I want to thank our listeners. Thanks, Bob and Cindy. Thank you, Bridger, for covering for me. Folks, have a great week. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller within the tradition folk music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices. See you next week.